welcome back to another episode of Confessions of a Crabby Christian,
a Misfit Media Network production.
I am your host and resident Crabby Christian, Blake, and every week I get to have the coolest conversations with incredible people about all the things most Christians are still not sure we're allowed to talk about. So if you've been looking for a place to land with all your crap, and for someone to just be honest about what it looks like to walk through this Christian life, well, you've come to the right place. Pull up a seat, pop in your headphones and tune out your kids, and come hang out with me and a guest for the authentic conversations that you have been looking for. All right, guys, I am super excited and honored to welcome Eitan Haim to the show today. He is a surgeon and so much more, so much more. I can't wait to get into your story, what you've experienced, and just the bravery and honor that you have shown in a field and an industry that kind of expects compliance from its members, and you've kind of chosen a different path. Welcome to Confessions of a Crappy Christian.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. That really means a lot. It's great to be here.
You are, I mean, my favorite title to wear, if I was you, would probably be whistleblower, because I'm all about like rocking the boat and doing what's right. And you kind of exposed what was happening behind the scenes about something that's really prevalent right now. It's super like in the headlines. It's a big issue that people are talking about. It was the transgender program at Texas Children's Hospital. Can you just kind of tell us a little bit about, they say they're closing down the program and they didn't. Like, what the heck happened there?
Yeah, it was hard to believe that it was happening in the first place, because it's just such a crazy thing. But for a little background, so I'm a general surgeon. I work in a small town outside of Dallas, but you know, I had just finished my residency training in June of 2023. So, you know, not too long ago. And residency training is what you do after medical school, where you train in your chosen specialty. So for internal medicine, that's 3 years. For general surgery, that's 5 years. Mm-hmm. And for neurosurgery, it's 7 years. So I was at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas, and one of the best surgical training programs in the country. And one of the hospitals we spent the most time at was Texas Children, which really is one of the favorite hospitals I ever worked at, because you have the sickest children and, you know, you're able to do the best work for the kids who need it the most.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had come to discover this thing, and it was shocking, because it's a stain on the reputation of the hospital, for an otherwise amazing hospital. But in March of 2022, the hospital unequivocally said they were going to shut down their transgender program because of the legal risks. And it's important to point out that they had acknowledged in their statement that there were legal risks. So this was in response to an opinion released by Ken Paxton, the Texas AG, who said that it can be investigated as child abuse.
Right.
And it makes sense that they would release that statement, because they want to, you know, cover themselves and prevent any liability. Yeah.
Right.
As they've acknowledged. But, you know, so if you were just a random person in Houston, you know, you want to take your kids to the hospital, you think that this thing is shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that was a lie. The reason I knew that, because I worked there. You know, I did surgery there. The people who were doing this told me. So I found it unbelievable that residents had come up to me in the months after that, told me they were implanting period blocking devices into children as young as 11, 12 years old, saying that they had all these psychiatric problems going unaddressed. You know, how these kids would express that they wanted more surgery. They were confident they never wanted to have kids. And it's like, you have a 11, 12 year old kid. They can't make those decisions. It's not even possible.
They can't even pick their own bedtimes.
Exactly.
Like,
and you're exposing them to risks and consequences at a time when they are least able to understand the implications.
Yeah.
So really, at first, I did believe it. It was too crazy.
It's unbelievable. And there are a lot of people on the liberal side of this conversation that are like, it's not happening that young. Like, they're not doing it to 11-year-olds. And you're sitting here going, well,
yeah,
they are.
They're doing it and they're lying about it.
Exactly.
So it took me a while to really acknowledge what was happening. But it was in January of 2023, so 7 months after that statement, and more people were telling me about they were doing these procedures, young children. But then in January of 2023, the directors of the program that supposedly did not exist, the directors of the transgender program, were given the opportunity to speak at the hospital's most prestigious lecture series called Grand Rounds. And this lecture series highlights the hospital's priorities. So it goes to show that they're prioritizing something they told the public they were not doing. And, you know, they talked about how they had an algorithmic approach to these young kids and to starting them on blockers and hormones, advising pediatricians, general pediatricians, to ask about gender identity behind the backs of the parents.
Again, all things that people are trying to tell us aren't happening.
Exactly.
And you're like, the doctors are, you're not even hearing it secondhand. You're hearing it from the doctors that are doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. From the people themselves.
Right.
Even after that, you had multiple members of the transgender program have a Zoom conference with like 150 medical students to talk about all of the same stuff. There was actually one social worker who said that in order to avoid like, you know, public scrutiny, she doesn't document the consults, which is like, as a healthcare person, the craziest thing you could possibly do, because everything relies on documentation.
Literally.
Yeah, that's our job, right? It's
right.
It's like a requirement.
Right. And it's a requirement for a reason, because we need documentation. Like you were talking about earlier, the doctors are saying they're seeing all these psychiatric issues. Mm-hmm. They're seeing the mental problems and just continuing on with, you know, quote unquote, gender affirming care.
Yeah, you have to like be able to logically write down and document the reasoning behind what you're doing.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm about to do a surgery later today. Like I have to document this person with this problem. We're going to do this because it's affected.
And they need it.
Yeah. And that's why it's important. And they're doing that to avoid scrutiny from governing medical bodies. Like, but at that point, I realized like it's clear what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. They knew that the people of Texas wouldn't support this kind of thing. So they just told them they would shut it down. They took the sign off the door, but then continued it in secret. But it was an open secret because you must have had hundreds of people. Guarantee you the CEO of the hospital knew, chief legal counsel, everyone knew.
Yeah.
But somehow they thought it was a good idea just to tell people that, we're not doing it anymore, but we'll just do it, you know.
Well, like the masses, right? Like the quote unquote actual people you're lying to, but it's easier to tell the people that you know are going to basically be on board with it because they either want the services or they're going to make money from providing the services.
Exactly. And this is not like a small clinic.
Right.
This is social workers, counselors, endocrinologists, pediatricians, you know, general pediatricians, psychiatrists. So this multidisciplinary clinic that has all these different stages, right? It's not like you could do this easily without a huge amount of people knowing.
Exactly. Like this isn't like a one room situation where they're really keeping it under wraps. This is a clinic.
Yeah. And this is the biggest children's hospital in the world and one of the most prestigious, right? I mean, biggest children's hospital in the world by like a third. Like they have like 900 something beds. Number two is, I think, Penn, which has like maybe 500, 600.
Wow.
So
yeah,
if I got those numbers correct, I'm pretty sure it's around that number. But
yeah.
So I knew I had to do something. It was a responsibility as professional responsibility as a surgeon, a moral responsibility as an individual, right? Like when I take that oath, right? Do no harm, to take care of these people.
Yeah.
That doesn't just end in the operating room for me or in the clinic, but it has to do with outside of that. If there is abuse happening within a hospital, if there is this type of violation of medical ethics where a hospital is lying to the public, I have a responsibility to do something. And, you know, I couldn't live with myself if I didn't. So I started reaching out to journalists, and took me 5 months to get a hold of Chris Ruffo.
Yeah.
You know, reach out to all the big organizations, you know, you think would take a story like this, but either they didn't believe me, right? Because I'm just some random guy and the story was kind of hard to believe.
Yeah.
Or they thought I was just some, you know, like I was a no one.
Right.
I would just send emails to people like,
right.
cold emails and hope I would get a response. So I finally get a hold of Chris Ruffo in mid-May of 2023, so about after 5 months. And it was the perfect timing. I mean, and what I believe is providence, divine providence, because I didn't know this at the time, but a week and a half after that, Texas was voting on a law called SB 14, which was the law that was going to ban these interventions in children.
Mm-hmm.
So he understood the importance of it. And to me, I couldn't believe it. So we go through this verification process, make sure everything's legit. providing evidence that they're doing this definitively, lying to the public. So then I was going to come, you know, just be the anonymous whistleblowing story.
Right.
The story comes out on May 16th, right? And gets in all the big headlines. And I'm still anonymous at this point.
Right.
A day later, Texas Senate votes on the law. And because our story came out the day before, people had actually handed out physical copies to each member of the Texas Senate. So people knew this was happening in one of the biggest cities in Texas. So because of our story, there were multiple Democrats who voted in favor of the bill.
Wow.
So it was passed with bipartisan support. So within 24 hours of our story coming out, the conduct we had exposed was voted to become illegal within the state of Texas.
Yeah.
And many would say that it had always been illegal, which I would subscribe to that belief.
Right.
I do believe, yeah. Like this has always been illegal, right? Because this is child abuse, in my opinion.
Right. Can I ask you a question just like as a provider? Because I think the pushback, I agree with you 100%. I actually use my platform to talk about this quite a bit. But the pushback is often, why do we get to decide, like, if these parents and these children are making this decision together, right? Why do you get to interfere and say, y'all shouldn't get to do this anymore?
Yeah, such a good question. Because I think that the reason this has been allowed to happen is because we've been debating on the wrong terms, on the wrong playing field. So this is not about informed consent, because you cannot consent to something that has no therapeutic rationale.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, like, when we do a appendectomy, you have an inflamed appendix and you go in there, surgically remove it, and the problem gets solved. But you can see the problem with your, with your eyes. You can feel it with your hands. You can smell it. You can look at it under a microscope. You can prove it.
Yeah.
There's therapeutic rationale. There's reasoning behind it. For everything in medicine we do, there has to be that reasoning. But that's where it starts. Number one, therapeutic rationale. But you also have to have evidence to demonstrate it's effective, right?
Exactly.
That these people actually do get better. So in this case, with everything else in medicine, we have to follow that framework. But the Overton window has shifted for this. Mm-hmm. It's like a small cutout.
It is.
Where this is the one field where you don't have to have a therapeutic rationale. You don't have to have evidence to support it. The only reason we allow it is because we've been bullied into submission.
Exactly.
People haven't been talking about it in the way that it really is, because what they're doing is they're taking a psychological problem and using physiological interventions, medicine and surgery, to try to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been down that road before, right? Taking a psychological problem with a physiological solution.
And we don't look back on it real kindly. Not that long out. Like,
yeah.
When did Rosemary Kennedy have her lobotomy? Maybe.
Exactly.
Years ago? You know, like.
Yeah. And there are some people who got lobotomies that swore by it.
Yeah, exactly.
It had made me better. But still, we don't recognize it as legitimate because you're taking a problem of the mind and using a solution of the body. Mm-hmm. Just like if someone came into my clinic and they said, I want my arm chopped off because I would believe I should have been born this way. I would lose my license.
There's no world within which you're doing that. I feel like you can speak to this even more than I can. The cultural conversation about this sanitizes what's actually being done to these kids. Right? Like, they clean it up and make it consumable. And then you really look at what they're doing and it's disgusting.
It's hard to really describe how bad it is, because there's so many details that get missed when you talk about this conversation. Because, like, take, for example, puberty blockers. Mm-hmm. People see it as kind of like the benign middle ground that we can somehow reach a compromise on. But what they're doing is they're starting these kids on blockers, 11, 12 years old. It's shutting down the central pathway for their entry into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is they never develop their secondary sexual characteristics. So you'll have a 18, 19 year old man with a micropenis, with the genitalia of an 11 year old, right? There's no changing that.
That's the lie, is that, like, they can just get off the blockers and then puberty will start. And there are a lot of doctors out there going, oh, no, that's not how it works.
trying to find vitamins that my kids won't turn their nose up at has been an adventure, because typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise, filled with like 2 teaspoons of sugar and all these unhealthy chemicals, but then the other ones don't taste good. We have tried so many, and one of my kids' absolute favorites is Hiya. Hiya is made with zero sugar, none of the gummy stuff, yet it tastes great. It is perfect for picky eaters. It is formulated with the help of nutritional experts and pressed with a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables, and then they supercharge it with 15 essential vitamins and minerals, including vitamin D, B12, C, zinc, folate, a ton of vitamins to help support immunity, energy, brain function, mood, teeth, bones. It's non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, nut-free, everything else you can imagine free. They come in a little bottle that my kids had a blast decorating with our own stickers, and then the refills come once a month. So we worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. You can get 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, go to hiyahealth.com/Blake. This deal is not available on their regular website, so go to hiyahealth.com/Blake and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
And also, it's the way their recommendations. Mm-hmm. These blockers are not meant to be reversible, because their recommendations themselves say that if you ever stray away from this path, you're going to kill yourself. Mm-hmm. So they're not meant to be used in a way that's reversible. They're meant to be one path forward: blockers, hormones, surgery.
Yeah.
So they provide no off-ramp. They provide no room for exploration, because the only thing to explore is the path forward, you know, towards, you know, the identity that's based off hatred of their true self.
Right.
But then even more so, it's like with the hormones, right? If you're a woman and you start taking these mega doses of testosterone, you start growing facial hair, that's never going back. Mm. You develop vaginal atrophy. So any type of intercourse is going to become sometimes restrictively painful. You can have hemorrhagic bleeding. You know, Jamie Reed, the whistleblower from St. Louis, worry about how she had a patient come in who had this hemorrhagic bleeding. And I've seen cases like that before, not related to transgender, but you know, where people have vaginal atrophy and massive vaginal bleeding.
Yeah.
Devastating.
Right.
But then the surgeries are a whole different level.
They're horrific.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like, for example, people like me and you, just like urination, we take it for granted. Mm-hmm. But after these surgeries, one of the most common problems is blockage of the urethra, not being able to control the direction of your stream. So what happens is whenever they go in public, if they have to go to the bathroom, right? If they urinate, it's just going to get all over them, or they're not going to be able to empty completely. Sometimes they have to get what's called a suprapubic tube, which is placed through their abdomen into their bladder, right? Sometimes for months. And that's not to include all the pain from this massive surgery.
Right.
You create this chronic wound, which is just healing.
You take a chunk out of your forearm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
a full thickness chunk. And it's important for people. For skin grafts, I mean, this is the muscle, right? All the fat tissue, the skin. And that's a major, major surgery.
Yeah.
Huge piece of tissue. And you're losing a great degree. You can lose great degree of functionality and have major problems with wound healing afterwards.
Right.
So, yeah, that's horrifying. And this is all a problem of the mind. And they're using solutions of the body.
Exactly. And also to the child abuse statement, is it not to a degree the community's job? Like, no parent abusing a child is going to be like, hey, I'm abusing my kid, come get me. Right? This is the same thing. Like, you were watching this happen, and obviously, like, people involved in abuse aren't going to turn around and go, this is abuse, I need to stop. And so sometimes it is the community around them's job to step in and do it for them.
Well, yeah. And especially the other argument, right? You talked about, like, well, the argument is sanitized because we talk about these issues on the wrong ground, right?
Right.
The one thing is informed consent. We talked about that. But then the other one is individual rights, right? Well, if you have an individual right to do this, but it's a misidentification of, like, the boundaries of that.
Yeah.
Because we don't allow people to cut off their own limbs or kill themselves. Because we're a society that's based on human dignity.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't cross that line because we understand that every human, no matter who, is dignified because they're created by a higher power.
Exactly.
And that because they are of that lineage of us, that we have to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
So the same reason we don't allow people to abuse their children, because those children are dignified.
Right.
Because we don't allow people to commit suicide or chop off their limbs because they're dignified. This is the same thing, but it's the same way with the other argument. The Overton window has been shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been bullied into submission because we haven't talked about it properly.
Do you feel like the doctors that were doing all of these procedures had been bullied into it, or were they just kind of, or was it kind of a mix where, like, I'm sure some of them believe in it.
Yeah, I think the doctors who were doing it, I think it's hard to say, because I think they, to a certain extent, do believe in it, but I think that there's a part of me that they almost can't believe in it. It's too crazy.
Like, do you think they're almost like, you have to force yourself to believe in it to be able to do those things?
Yeah, it's like when you have this emptiness in your soul, it has to be filled with something.
Yeah.
So this is going to be that cause that will provide for them the meaning in their life.
Yeah.
Because everyone in life, we want something meaningful. So they want to be righteous without the difficulty of living a virtuous life.
Mm.
They want to stand up for the persecuted, but they don't want to do so by taking a risk, right? They want to live a meaningful life without the work necessary to do anything meaningful.
Yeah.
So they create this ideology around something that's not real.
Right.
It's like their distress is real, but everything around it is fictionalized.
It's like the idol is real, but the worship isn't.
No better way. I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't mind, I'm gonna use that. That's great.
Steal it 100%. It's what you were saying. I just made it one sentence.
Yeah.
They believe in what they're worshiping, but obviously the hope is that there maybe is one day where these doctors go, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah. But I think that there's never going to be that day.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, it's to self-reflect is to self-immolate. Because if you really look back, if you're one of these people and you think to yourself, like, you've been intimidating everyone around you to believe in something, to believe that you're the one protecting these children, they're the one harming them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you have to look into yourself and come to the conclusion that it was actually me who was harming these children and all of them who were protecting them.
Yeah. Like, how do you survive that?
Exactly. How do you come to the conclusion that it was yourself who was destroying these children and putting them in harm's way? And I think that there's a certain point where that conclusion, it's so heavy.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't. Like, I totally agree with you. Like, now just looking back at what I just said, hoping that they come around to that. I think with Jesus, you could. With, like, a relationship with God, you could come and, like, repent and change. But that's a hard road to walk, you know?
Yeah, I think it would only be the redemption through spirituality and faith in Christianity or you know, Judaism for me.
Right, exactly.
That someone would be able to, you know,
right. Yeah.
Have powerful. And I believe religion is the one thing that would provide that power.
Absolutely.
You have to have an anchor, something that's so solid, that's fixed into this earth, that's been with us forever.
Yeah, 100%. You would need a supernatural answer.
Yeah.
To that kind of, honestly, like, depravity.
Exactly.
And you said something interesting just now about that they've not only bullied us into believing that they're the ones helping, but that people like you and I are the ones that are hurting these kids. I actually went to a hearing I'm in Louisiana, and our Congress just debated some bills on this issue like last year. And there was a mother who came and she was like, we will have to move if you ban these procedures. You're going to hurt my kid. And I remember just sitting there being like, the reality that you have to live within to believe that exactly what you said earlier, that this is the answer to a psychological issue.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is any self-reflection would result in self-immolation, because those parents, unfortunately, come to that conclusion that they were the ones harming their kids.
Yeah.
You know, and to a certain extent, you have to have some sympathy for the parents, because
absolutely,
I've met a lot of parents who have been deceived into it, or the kids have been caught up in it without mm-hmm. the knowledge of their parents.
Yep.
Yeah, I've talked to so many parents who their kids have been taken away from them and they get put into foster care. Now they're being sold into prostitution, to slavery. Yep. They don't know where the kids are. And it's the saddest thing.
It is. It's devastating.
It's, you know, you hear these stories, but then when you talk to a parent and you hear the story, it's just the most unbelievable thing to ever experience.
The kids are you're talking about kids being taken away because parents won't go along with gender affirming care. Yeah. There are states that have passed bills to like ensure that give the government more power to do that.
Yeah.
Like, did we learn nothing in 2020? Like, I do not co-parent with the government. You know what I mean?
And that's the thing, is people have to understand how far things have gone. That if we don't do something now, things are going to get really, really bad.
Yeah.
Well, they are really, really bad.
They are. Which, speaking of being really, really bad, let's get back to what you're going through now, right? So you find the journalist, the piece gets released anonymously, the Senate bill passes. You go to graduate mm-hmm. from your residency and things go a little sideways.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was about a month later. I'm still anonymous. And my graduation was on June 23rd, 2023, month after the story comes out. And the day you graduate from residency is a big day, really important, because you sacrifice so much, you know, those 5 years before, you know, you miss so many important life events that when you finish all of that, it's a monumental moment. Your family's there. It's a big day. So it was a Friday around 11:12 early afternoon, and we're getting ready for the ceremony later that night when all of a sudden get an aggressive knock on the door. I shuffle over, open the door. Standing outside are two federal agents. They tell me they're with Health and Human Services, and they show me their badges in their investigating case regarding medical records. And you just kind of freeze in that moment. You completely freak out, but there was a part of me, like, deep down, like, I knew exactly what it was about.
Yeah.
That the month before we had challenged, you know, the dominant political ideology. And a day later, the law was passed. They were there to make an example out of me, because if other doctors couldn't do that, then who's to say what else would happen? Because I had mentioned this before, but a few days after the original story came out in May, another whistleblower from the hospital came out.
Yep.
So it inspired more people. And that's the kind of thing that they want to avoid. So I knew they were there to make an example out of me, but of course you kind of freak out in the moment.
Right.
Yeah, I invite them in, we sit down and exchange some small talk, but they wanted to do an interview with me. So they start setting up a tripod.
Like right there?
Yeah, reluctantly agreed, right? But then my wife comes out, and this is an important part of the story, which will be important a little bit later, but my wife had been hired as a assistant U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Texas.
Oh, how nice.
At the Department of Justice. So she was undergoing a background check at the time. So she's brilliant. She's a brilliant lawyer.
Yeah.
He sits down and we both look at each other and we're like, you know, we have to talk privately. So we go to our bedroom, close door, and we both knew that talking to them without an attorney, bad idea. So we go back out and tell them that, you know, we won't talk without an attorney present.
Yeah.
And they say, okay, that's fine. Before leaving, they give me a target letter. And so then they leave, door closes. And then we knew that our lives would change. But what this target letter was, is it's just a piece of paper and informed me that I was a potential target of a criminal investigation. And it was signed by the U.S. Department of Justice.
Okay, can we just take a second for what a freaking scare tactic that is? Like, we might. Maybe we're going to potentially investigate you. Like, who does that?
And it gets even worse. I mean, it's, and that's the reason I came out publicly, because of course, this is a scare tactic. Health and Human Services, a typically sclerotic, slow moving organization. The reason we know they're slow moving is because my wife is in the Department of Justice working with HHS.
Right.
The exact department that the irony could be thick enough. Right. But we know they don't do things within a month. So a month later, they organize this investigation. They send these agents. But not only that, I just recently found out the FBI has been involved. The FBI has interviewed residents at my program, right? So what are they doing, right? It makes no sense. Why would the FBI be?
This is like a movie, by the way.
Yeah, it just gets crazier.
Yeah, right.
I'm telling you, it just gets crazier. So, of course, we knew after that door closed, we're like, this is crazy. We knew if we give into it, we're just legitimizing this corrupt investigation. And we've seen what happened the past couple of years where you have these political investigations. The person thinks that because they're innocent, that's their greatest defense. But when they're working with a corrupted, politically driven DOJ,
yep.
because they're innocent, because they're virtuous, that's the reason they're being targeted in the first place.
Yep.
The goal is not justice. The goal is to destroy these people.
And shut them up.
That's not a good idea. I'm not going to do that. So we decide to fight back. You know, they want to intimidate. They want to instill fear when they showed up at my door. But as they're coming to find out, they knocked on the wrong door.
Yeah. Because they are probably used to people just lying down. Because it's scary as hell to get a letter from the DOJ. Like,
yeah. And especially for doctors. Because we're naturally very, very timid, right? Reserved. Mm-hmm. Don't do anything like this. But like, there's going to be no profession for my children. And I just found out my wife's pregnant. You know, she's 14 weeks. She's going to have a girl. Yeah.
Oh, yay. Yeah.
So we decided to fight, right?
Yeah.
Because we knew it was the right thing to do. We go into a state of legal purgatory. And, you know, we got in touch with our attorney through Christopher Rufo. And he's an amazing guy. He really did his work because our attorney is this, you know, she's like this Shiite Catholic, like rosary in one hand, middle finger in the other, bulldog of an attorney.
Yeah.
And she knew this was just as much political as much legal. I mean, it's not legal. This is all political, right? No legal statute had been violated.
Can we back up to like what they're saying they're investigating you for?
Yeah. So the information from that comes from a letter my attorneys had released to Congress. So they themselves had blown the whistle, right? Because what they had experienced with the prosecutor was so shocking that they felt it was necessary for them to expose it so that we can hold them accountable. But from that letter, we can kind of understand what they were trying to investigate. But to answer your question, I would say my opinion in a simple way is that they were just looking for anything. It's like throwing a bunch of handful of darts at the board and hoping something would stick. Because in documents in that letter, in the initial conversations my attorneys had, it turns out that the prosecutor didn't even know any of the facts of the case.
Which the prosecutor's kind of an idiot.
Yeah, your words. Yeah.
My words. That's my words.
But I would agree. It's like it's like a first year law student at some activist university.
Yeah.
It's like you don't know anything about this case. You don't even know what you're going to investigate. But she had sent agents to my apartment on the day of my graduation without knowing anything about the case. But she admitted this to my attorneys. How crazy is that?
Wow. Like, it's one thing to do it. It's another thing to be like, yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah. But despite the fact that she didn't know anything about the case, right? She didn't do her research to find out what this was about. She did enough research to find out my wife was undergoing a background check. She brings it up. Well, my wife isn't going to have a problem with her background check, or she intoned it unless she continues to become difficult.
Mm.
Right. So my wife encouraging me to use my constitutional right is somehow being difficult. She had mentioned that I had no right to blow the whistle. Right. And if I had a problem with it, I should have just stood on the sidewalk with a sign.
Are we in Russia?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did I like what the hell? No, that's actually the whole point is that we can blow the whistle whenever the heck we want to anonymously or with our name.
Yeah. And that, you know, if I wanted to avoid felony prosecution, I just had to apologize to the doctors and the families. What we think they were pursuing was some type of privacy issue.
Like HIPAA. But
the good thing is all the evidence is on Twitter and there's nothing that could even in a million years be perceived as that.
Right.
But the one thing what we had exposed, was they had acknowledged was potentially criminally could be legally held liable for, like their activity.
Right.
What we had exposed was voted to become illegal within 24 hours.
Literally. And you talked earlier about that y'all did your due diligence. You went through and verified everything. Like people share, like I'm sure that the information you shared was anonymous. Like you weren't giving, where you get like patients' names and stuff.
And yeah, that's the thing is, everyone can look online. If there's anyone who could find anything that reveals any private information, then you must be like a psychic or a magician or something.
Yeah.
And that's for us. It's like, that's why I have nothing to hide. It's like, I have no problem because of all this corruption, right? Like that we experience over the next couple of months, you know, the decision of whether to take the story public, you know, it's a hard decision because in those months, you know, we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on legal bills because we knew we had to fight back. And if you don't represent yourself, like, these people will walk all over you, destroy you.
Right.
But because of the corruption, we knew that I had to speak out to fight against it. Because whenever you tell this story, the corruption becomes self-evident. That's 100%. All you have to do. And that's where these people work best, is when they work in the shadows. When they have our compliance, they can do whatever they want to us.
Yeah.
But if we refuse to go silently, then they have to answer for what they're doing.
Right.
So yeah, that's why I decided to speak out, because once you just make this known, it's obvious.
Well, they were lying. Like, why are you getting a letter of investigation? You didn't say you did something and then did something else and continued to partake in child abuse. Like,
and it's a doctor's job to report child abuse.
Right.
And the hospital acknowledged that that was the legal liability they were trying to avoid.
Right.
And people have to know that this is not just some theoretical problem, that this happened to me, right? Just some regular guy. This is going to come for you, right?
That was like one of my biggest thoughts when I was looking, you know, like obviously doing my due diligence of your story, is like, this is the perfect snapshot of the way that the Biden administration has weaponized their DOJ against everyone from Donald Trump to like a doctor in small town Texas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you've like actually had it happen. You're not the only one. I mean, there's so many people who, across an array of issues, have had just this scare tactic that is, at the end of the day, like, so un-American and violates so many constitutional rights.
And the thing is, for us, in our position, we have to start changing the way we perceive these issues, because it's not just okay to talk about it. Mm-hmm. For me to like come out there and be like, oh, you know, this bad thing happened to me, look how corrupt it is. That is meaningless. It's pointless. As conservatives, as a movement, we're done with that.
Yeah.
Because now it's time to go on the offense. And that's exactly what we're doing. Because my case is meaningless unless we hold these people accountable. And that's what we will spend however many resources, however much time, however much effort to make sure that we could do. And that's why, you know, means so much, you know, people who donate to our Give, Send, Go. It's givesendgo.com/Texas_whistleblower. All the money that goes there, you know, will go towards holding these people accountable, because we have this letter we sent to Jim Jordan in Congress, to the Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Department of Justice. What we're trying to do is have an investigation in order to hold these people accountable.
Yeah.
So that they will not be in these positions, because they should not be working here. They should not be in a position where they can abuse their authority, right? There has to be severe consequence to doing this. And we know that most of our politicians will not do it. We know that most of the people in power will not do it. So it's going to be incumbent on a random person like me, right? And people like you, and average Americans,
right?
Stand up and say, you know what? We're not tolerating this anymore. Like, we're not just talking about it, but we're going to come for your jobs, mm-hmm. right?
What does that look like? Like, are there cases you're bringing against them, or?
Yeah, well, that's what this letter is. Yeah. But, you know, it's resources. It's a lot of resources, like legal resources, medical resources.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's money. But the thing is, we're raising money for it. We've raised a lot of money, which is amazing. But we are doing it, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's just so crazy, like, to think what you've walked through in the last year.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, you think that you're going to walk into like this world where like you're going to be destroyed. It's like this world of darkness. If you do something like this, you're going to lose everything. And there are risks involved there. We've sacrificed a lot. We've given up all of our savings, all of our retirement, our investments, everything. And that's okay. It's the best investment we've ever made,
mm-hmm.
because for these people who want to treat us as subjects, as peasants, you know, these people who think we're so stupid and that we have no rights, these people who lie to us, who take our money and our taxes and use it for these ridiculous things. So this is one time where I had the opportunity to stand up to them and say, no.
Like, enough is enough.
I'm not a subject. I'm not a peasant. That I'm a citizen of the United States of America. and you have no right to do this. And not only do you have no right to do this, but we're going to hold you accountable. And I'm going to spend the rest of my life making sure you're held accountable for this.
Yeah.
And you thought like you were just going to knock on someone's door and I was going to bend the knee.
Yeah.
But you knocked on the wrong door.
I think a lot of people will resonate with that after. And look, I'm not even trying to get into a conversation about vaccines with a doctor, but most people are agreed that the OSHA mandates and the way that they expected everyone to just bend the knee Absolutely. Or to lose their jobs. I think a lot of people walked through that in real time and can resonate with what you're saying as far
especially
as
like, with the vaccines.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I believe all this came from the ideology that was perpetuated during COVID.
Exactly.
Because it was not based on evidence. It was not based off of objective reality. It was based on an ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And the ideology that controlled the way we interact with our family, our loved ones, with the world, it controlled the way we stand in line, the way we pay for our groceries.
Yeah.
Nothing that was based on anything that we see in the real world. Like, it's not evidence, it's not objective.
Right.
It was all made up.
Right.
But we had to comply to it. And this is the same way. And the only way that these things are able to survive is if we don't do something about it.
Yep.
But there's no middle ground, right? It's like we can't meet halfway in our own destruction.
Mm-mm.
We say, no, we speak the truth. And no matter what the consequences are, we will speak that truth. If you want to throw me in prison, you throw me in prison, mm-hmm. right? You want to take everything away from me, take it away. But there's no way I'm ever going to leave a legacy to my daughter, to my children, without letting them know that I didn't fight for their future.
Exactly.
And people have to know that that's what's on the line.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has been. It has been on the line since, like you said, about 2020. I mean, we had the situation where like we didn't get the vaccine and my husband was on the verge of losing his job. And it had to be like, is this our line? And I think people have to decide, like, what is too far for you?
Yeah.
And are you going to be okay with that if yeah. like things go beyond that and you have to do your part?
Yeah. And it, I don't know. Do you have children?
Yes, I do. I have a 7 and a 9-year-old.
Yeah. And you have to understand, like, you know, your children, you know, when they grow up, they're going to say, my parents, they made this hard decision.
Yeah.
You know, they did the right thing when it was the most difficult thing. And in many ways, that's, you know, I grew up with that same type of folklore in my own family. You know, like I had on one side, my family is Iraqi, right? They were Jews in Iraq. You know, they had fled Iraq. They moved to Israel. They were one of the first generations in Israel to be pioneers in this country.
Yeah.
On my mom's side, you know, they were Christian, but they were Germans. So my grandfather was drafted to the German army during World War II.
Yeah.
He was never a Nazi, but, you know, he had to fight in the military.
Yeah.
And when he was in Italy, you know, he had a decision, does he just go along? But he said no, you know, so he risked his life and saved Jews in Italy by writing them fake papers. And, you know, there's probably thousands of people who are alive today because he decided to do what he did in that mm-hmm. moment when it was the most difficult thing, when he risked his life. So it's like, if I have those stories in my family, then
exactly.
if I don't do this thing now, then what kind of honor would I be doing to the people who had given me the opportunity to be here today.
Right. Like, we're standing on the shoulders of these people who in some form or fashion made really hard decisions when given the opportunity. And it's so easy these days to just, I don't feel like dealing with that, or it takes too much money, or it takes too much time, or it's too scary, or I just don't feel like doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that really, we've seen that a lot the last 4 years, is people that are just like, I just don't feel like it.
And, you know, it's one thing in those days, right? Because you're facing down this, you know, these really intimidating people with guns and jack boots, and that's scary. But when you think about today, who are we facing? These petulant, neurotic, bureaucratic weenies.
Yeah.
Who don't know anything about anything. Like, I wouldn't let Anthony Fauci or any of these gender doctors take care of my goldfish.
Exactly.
But somehow they're leading authorities on like this medicine.
Right.
All we have to do is stand up to these people and just say it like it is. These people are lying. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Yep.
The only way they're in their position is because of the goodwill we've provided them.
Right.
They have no reason for that goodwill. So we just have to refuse to give it.
Well, just trust the science and everything will be
exactly.
fine.
Yeah.
Except they control the science and they manipulate it to say whatever they want it to say.
Yeah. It's a meaningless really, when it comes to medicine, it's not about science. It's not about evidence. It's about human dignity. It has to start with human dignity first, yeah. Because you have to develop therapies that are in line with human dignity. The evidence is just to support those therapies, what you think is reasonable, what is effective. But there has to be a reasoning behind whatever you do to another human.
Yeah.
The risks have to outweigh the benefits, but you have to be able to explain that in a rational way.
Right. And like you said, there are so many that are just skipping that part.
Yeah.
So that they don't get in trouble.
Yeah. And it's because they have forgotten that point about human dignity, right? You can develop a scientific study, like a randomized controlled trial or whatever, you know, study to support conclusions you want to have in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But can have it to say anything. But if you rely on human dignity as your guiding force, then that is the way that you're effective in treating people.
Yeah. I'm so thankful that there are doctors like you out there that we can know, like, go on the front lines. You may not be in that world because you don't want to be, but like in that specific like transgender treatment world, but your world comes right up against it and you've like chosen to do the right thing. I'm so thankful to just even get to like share my platform with you and share your story, because I think it's incredible and it's scary and it's hard, but you're doing what needed to be done.
Yeah. And it's only going to be people like other doctors. It has to come from within.
Yeah.
It has to be other doctors who speak out against this, because we know how absurd this is.
Right.
We know how dangerous it is what they're doing to these kids, because like we can see what these complications are down the road, and it's a house of horrors.
Yeah. It really is. Thank you so much for your time. Like you're literally in your scrubs and you were like, I might get a call.
Yeah.
We made it work. We did it. I'm so thankful.
Yeah, about to run to the operating room, but I appreciate it.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Crappy Christian Podcast. And hey, by the way, if you super loved it, can you go leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening? That'd be awesome. All right, see you next week.